We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to a Tuesday edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast. Nick Whalen back, as I always am on Tuesdays, with Alex Barutha. Alex, we had a bunch of news to parse through before we started the pod today. I had to get some things squared away on the site, and I'm actually glad that we were slightly delayed today because that enables us now to react to Adrian Wojnarowski, of course, of ESPN, tweeting mere minutes ago that James Harden had a setback in his hamstring rehab this morning. Had another MRI this afternoon. We still don't have a ton of information as far as like what exactly is going on with that hamstring, but out indefinitely, that's never a good thing. You very rarely do you want to hear that. And Woj followed up with a tweet saying that it really wouldn't be surprising at that point if Harden's return comes closer to the start of the playoffs as opposed to sometime in the next week or two, which I think was the initial estimate. This just adds to a situation that's been kind of insane, that we have this super team that has played seven games together this season. Its starting center just retired from the league a week ago. There's a very real chance that we're going to go into the NBA playoffs with Harden, Durant, and Kyrie playing fewer than 10 games together. Even if Harden comes back with like a week or two left, the way that Kyrie's been in and out, Durant's been, you know, the most injured of all these guys so far. It's just absolutely crazy. And we're now to the point where this thing is going to, by virtue of Harden missing more time, is going to have to kind of coalesce on the fly in the postseason.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, they may not have an opportunity to have like an easy first round series, right? Depending on how things shake out. Like if they drop, you know, like below Milwaukee and they end up as the third seed, pretty decent chance that they'll end up playing either like Boston or Miami in the first round of the playoffs. And like, you know, as much as people are down on both of those teams, if you are Brooklyn and you're trying to, I guess, figure things out on the fly again, I mean, I still have confidence in them, but Miami is not the team you'd want to see while you're trying to figure that stuff out.
No, not at all. And I've been on the side, essentially since James Harden arrived in Brooklyn, that the Nets are the team to beat, that even though Philadelphia has been right there all year, even though Milwaukee is always going to be there as long as Giannis is healthy, I just had a really hard time envisioning any team beating, you know, a team that has Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving on it. And, you know, as we look right now, I'm trying to pull up title odds on the DraftKings Sportsbook. They've been pulled from the website. We only have conference winner odds for the Western Conference. We don't even have Eastern Conference title odds. So they're apparently in the process of reformulating those now based on this. In some ways, I'm definitely not glad that there's all these injuries. I don't mean to say that. But I do think the fact that they're not going to have 40 plus games to play together and develop this rhythm, in some ways, it kind of standardizes things, if that makes sense. You know, where if you're Philly and you're Milwaukee, like, this is, again, you're never rooting for injuries, but it's like, look, this team is supremely talented. When they're at their best, there's probably not a team in the league that could beat them, but they're going to have to figure out how to play together now long term during the playoffs. So I think in some ways it maybe it doesn't lower their ceiling, but it probably lowers their floor game to game, because if there are any issues as far as sharing the ball, figuring out whose turn it is on which possession, you know, having to navigate that in the playoffs, like you said, is going to be really difficult. And it probably won't be an issue in round one, depending on the matchup. If it is Miami, maybe that is an issue. But if we get to round two, round three, and especially if any of these injuries continue into the postseason, you know, then at that point, the East becomes wide open.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes the East more interesting. You know, from like the East is interesting, but it really only has been so at the very top, right? With Philly, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee, people weren't really taking any of these other teams seriously. But the other teams in the conference are competitive, and you kind of just never know, like you said, if everyone, like, and hamstring injuries too, like Harden and Durant both dealing with hamstring injuries. Those are things that they don't go away that quickly. Like, we saw how much time Durant missed. You know, you can start favoring your other leg, other injuries occur. So yeah, I mean, this is obviously, like you mentioned, DraftKings pulling their odds. This is going to affect the playoff race, like, from here on out, and it'll only make the East more interesting.
Right. And again, I don't want to make it sound like we're praising the gods for bringing injuries upon the Brooklyn Nets. But yeah, like you said, it does make it more interesting. That's kind of the bottom line. I'm looking at the seeding in the East right now, and with Harden out the rest of the way, with KD essentially missing every other game, it seems like, I think there's a pretty good chance Philly finishes as the one. They currently have a one game advantage over Brooklyn. I mean, Milwaukee's right there. They've played horribly of late and are still only three games behind Brooklyn, four games behind Philly. You know, those three could basically finish in any order. I mean, even with just Durant and Kyrie, if those guys stay healthy the rest of the way, that's more than enough to get the one seed, depending on the schedule. To me, it's going to come down to how those 4 through 8 spots shake out. Like, getting the one might not necessarily be an advantage if Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler both miss another week, and all of a sudden Miami's the 8. And, you know, like, I don't know that Philly, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee will even know which of those three seeds is the most advantageous until the final night of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's really going to come down to the wire. Like, in the loss column, 4 through 8 is separated by, I guess, 2 games. And yeah. I mean, they all, each of these teams that you could end up seeing in the first round has, you know, like, except, I mean, I think Charlotte's the weakest team that you could feasibly end up facing. Although we don't know what's going to happen with Indiana. You know, like, Washington, Chicago, Toronto are still, I guess, technically in the mix with the play-in.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Toronto's a half game out of the play-in. Like, Toronto's doing everything it can to lose every single game and is a half game out of the 10 spot.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I don't think there'll be any easy outs. You know what I mean? Like, I think even if it's a team like Charlotte, which may be like the weakest of that group, I guess you might have to still deal with LaMelo Ball, because it seems like he's going to be healthy. And
right.
I mean, he's someone I do want to see in the playoffs as kind of an aside.
Yeah, well, the way it's shaping up right now, like, there has now become a little bit of a drop off between Charlotte at 8 and then that group of Indiana, Chicago, Washington, Toronto at 9 through 12. And obviously the play-in means that, you know, 4 out of those 5 teams will be involved at the end of it. And all you need to do is win 2 games. So, you know, nobody's out of it. But, you know, Indiana has some major injuries, like Miles Turner might be done for the year. Sabonis is going to miss another game. Chicago looks terrible. They're without LaVine for probably another week. Washington is Washington. We have no idea what's going on with Toronto. So I do agree with you. I think Charlotte is probably the strongest of that group. And getting LaMelo back obviously is going to be huge. If they can get Gordon Hayward back before the playoffs or even, like, you know, right before round one, that's obviously a big boost as well. I still think if you're Brooklyn, though, again, seeding might not matter. I would much rather play Charlotte. I think I'd rather play the Knicks. I'd even rather play Atlanta than having to match up with Boston or Miami in round one.
Yeah, I think so too, just from a like a talent and experience standpoint of Boston and Miami. Like I think Atlanta has a lot of talent.
Right.
And they I think are deservedly a four seed. I think that's kind of where we thought their like absolute upside would be, but I may not be as afraid of them as like the Heat, who are just in the finals.
Yeah, teams with the same record aren't necessarily created equally. You know, the Knicks have won six straight. They're an awesome feel-good story. You know, during a normal NBA season, I almost feel like they're getting robbed in some ways. Like, this would be the most fun Knicks season in a long time. Like, maybe even more fun than the year that I think they got the two seed with Melo in, like, 2011 or 12. Like, if there were fans at these games seeing what Julius Randle's doing game in and game out, like, this would be a much bigger story than it is. And it's already a pretty big story in the context of the 2020-21 season. But, you know, even if the Knicks and the Celtics finish with basically the same record, you know, if you're really being honest, gun to your head, I think most coaches would say we'll play the team that doesn't have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that's exactly right.
So you mentioned LaMelo. That news somewhat came out of nowhere last night. You know, we were kind of getting to the point, it had been, I think, exactly a month since LaMelo played his last game. But not only, you know, I kind of figured we would get a like, oh, he's a few weeks away or he's progressing. Like, we didn't get anything for a full month. And then we get he's fully healed and he's returning to basketball activities like right now. And it sounds like he could be back on the court within a week. Obviously, you know, this is huge for Charlotte as they try to lock up a playoff spot. It's also really interesting to look at how it's affected the Rookie of the Year race. And all of a sudden, LaMelo Ball is now back to being the heavy favorite, despite not even getting back on the court yet. He's now at minus 250 on DraftKings. Anthony Edwards now at plus 185. Haliburton, who's fading pretty quickly, is at plus 750. So it's kind of a two-man race now between LaMelo and Edwards. But just the fact that LaMelo is likely to play probably 10 to 12 more games, that would give him, you know, somewhere between 51 and 53 games on the season. It seems like, at least in the minds of odds makers, that's going to be more than enough, assuming that he doesn't just completely crater during that stretch, going to be more than enough to win him the award.
I think it will be. Yeah, and I think if you got LaMelo, you know, I think if you got his odds when he was, I don't even remember what he was, like right when he went out. I mean, he's plus odds, obviously.
Yeah.
I think you're in good shape if you got that number. Because like if you look at, you know, like LaMelo Ball's 21 game stretch where he basically like became a full-time starter is basically 20 points a game on efficient shooting with six assists, six rebounds, a steal and a half. Mm-hmm. Like he's been an excellent just player, not just rookie. And I think, you know, like people have been pretty hard on Edwards, and I think some of it's fair and some of it's not, but I, you know, if you had to say one's having a better season, I don't know how you could. Because the games played, I don't think, should matter for Rookie of the Year as much as for MVP. And so, you know, the fact that LaMelo is going to end up missing, like, I guess, what, 15, 20 games shouldn't matter that much.
I think realistically he could miss as few as, like, 19, which, again, as the odds imply, won't be enough to really knock him out of it. I think the key difference is that Edwards has not missed a single game. So it was going to be, you know, it could be 72 games versus, if LaMelo didn't come back, 41 games. And when you start to talk about a 31 game difference, I understand it. I didn't really feel too strongly about it. If LaMelo didn't come back and he still won the Rookie of the Year award with 41 games, I wouldn't have cared. I would be totally fine. In fact, I don't even know who I would vote for. I mean, Edwards has cooled off a little bit over the last couple of weeks. The thing with him is just the efficiency. You know, it just matters. It really matters like what you value as a voter. If you're someone who just looks at the points per game column, you're probably going to go with Edwards. If you're someone who digs into true shooting and usage rates and, you know, true shooting versus usage rate, because Anthony Edwards has the lowest true shooting percentage among any player with a usage rate north of 25 this season, then you're probably going to go toward LaMelo.
I didn't know that stat, but it would not have surprised me if you would have said, you know, is this true or not?
Yeah
I mean, the numbers are... Well, the
It'd
thing
be
is
weird if I brought it up and it wasn't true.
Yeah. the thing is, even but if you take LaMelo's, you know, stretch where he's been starting, he's scoring more points per game than Anthony Edwards. It's just whether or not people are going, like, how much stock are you putting in the first, you know, 20 games of the Hornets season when LaMelo was coming off the bench, which basically deflated his numbers like 5 points a game. But yeah, I mean, I think I think if LaMelo comes back and he plays well for 10 games and he's on ESPN again, lighting it up with behind the back passes, and the Hornets start winning games again and they're going to be in the playoffs, I think all those things are just going to kind of snowball together, and I think he'll end up getting it.
I completely misspoke on Edwards, by the way. His last 11 games, he's 22.2 points, 44.5% shooting, 37% from three. That's so nice. I mean, it's been pretty good. Yeah, he's been fine. I mean, it's been overshadowed by the Timberwolves getting blown out on most nights. Right. But honestly, I mean, with LaMelo, I don't even think he has to play that well. I honestly think it's just going to come down to the games played. Like he locked up the award with how great he was in January and February. And I think he just needs to like check into each game, get it marked down as yes, he played, and get that number over 50. And that's going to be enough.
Yeah, I think the rookie of the year is more about like the ceiling that you see out of a player for a decent stretch, like a 15 game ceiling, rather than, who was over the median of whatever you need to see for, 72 games.
Coach of the year. I want to touch on this real quickly. I haven't been able to find great odds. DraftKings hasn't offered him this year, but a few weeks ago we talked about Quinn Snyder. Like, this was the lock of all locks. The Jazz are running away with the best record in the league. They're the one seed. He's never won it before. It's in jeopardy now. I think he's probably still the favorite. It's got to be really close, though, between he and Monty Williams, whose Phoenix Suns are now 1.5 games behind Utah.
I think it's a discussion. I'm still leaning Quinn Snyder. I think that the Suns being good is more about the Chris Paul and being there than it is Monty Williams like changing things. Because like when you watch the Jazz, like the Jazz didn't really change their roster at all, right? They kept Jordan Clarkson, like they brought Derek Favors back, like they got Bogdanovich back, but he was only out for the playoffs anyway. Like they made almost zero roster moves, and now they're playing not a completely different style of basketball, but like it feels like they've absolutely peaked as a basketball team, like relative to their potential when you watch them play. And I think that was like, you give some credit to the players, but I think a lot of that has to do with Quinn Snyder. And I think for the Suns, it's, you got Chris Paul. He dominates the offense in a good way, and he deserves credit for that. But I'm not ready to say like, oh, it's like that just because because a lot of times you give coach of the year to the guy with one of the biggest jumps over expectations, which the Suns are in that category. But I don't, like, personally, I don't think Monty Williams' case is like that much stronger than Tom Thibodeau's case.
I think I would personally vote for Tibbs. I view it as more of a do the most with less, as opposed to just like having the best record with like a pretty good roster, if that makes sense. I mean, I think this Knicks team, I mean, I would not have been surprised if they finished the year with like 25 wins. I don't think a lot of people would have, like, based on what this roster looked like. It wasn't a fantastic offseason for them. They're bringing in Taj Gibson. They're kind of doing their same old Knicks type of moves that make you scratch your head. And I mean, they've won six in a row. They're four games over 500. They're a half game out of the four seed in the Eastern Conference. I think if they finish fourth, Tibbs is going to have a real case here, because, for a while there, the Jazz were on like a borderline historic pace, and it looked like they were going to win like, 55 games and just lock up the one. Like, the fact that I think like Snyder and Monty could kind of split votes. You know, they're very similar candidates as far as, leading like pretty good rosters to success. And I think they're probably going to be separated by one or two games at the end of the year. So, the people that maybe lean toward that type of candidate are going to be split between Utah and Phoenix, and then maybe everybody else votes for Tibbs.
Yeah, I think so. Do you think, what do you think Steve Nash's chances are? Like, I don't think he's really, I don't think he's going to get it, but the Nets are second in the East, and like we keep harping on, they have barely had their best players together. Like, their minutes leader is Joe Harris. Their third leading minutes total guy is Jeff Green. Their fifth is Bruce Brown. The fact that they're 38-19 is great. And I know that they usually have two of those three guys available, and even one of those three guys available will get you a 500 team. But I think it's still pretty impressive what they've done.
No, for sure. I was on the Nash train, I think probably over a month ago at this point. And the case was just, one, the team record, and two, he's Steve Nash, and people love Steve Nash. And I think a lot of people want to believe that he's kind of the glue holding this team together. I don't think he really has a great chance to win it. I don't think they've been, like, record-wise, they haven't been quite good enough. You know, if they were five games up as the number one seed in the East with all these injuries, then I think he would have a pretty solid case. But, yeah, you know, they're probably going to finish second. I don't think the record's going to be quite as impressive enough. And then, you know, for as many people love Steve Nash and want to give him credit, at the same time, a lot of people will say, even though these guys were hurt, you know, you walked right into coaching a super team. You added a superstar 20 games into the year. And, you know, any coach could have done this.
That's true. Yeah.
Looking at MVP real quickly, is there anything Jokic could do to lose the MVP, barring missing the rest of the season with an injury? I think last night probably locked it up, which is crazy because the guy who I think is third in the odds right now, Steph Curry, is on an all-time tear, went for 49, hit 10 threes last night. And then you switch over to NBA TV and Jokic is like quietly throwing up 47 and 15 in a victory.
Right. I mean, he's been ridiculous. I think his offensive numbers right now, I mean, don't they rival any LeBron season?
Jokic, I mean, or Curry?
Jokic. Well, I guess both, but I'm talking about Jokic. Jokic's MVP case. Like,
yeah.
This is just a 9-game stretch, so this isn't his whole season, but over the last 9 games, he's 26 points on 58, 33, 80 shooting, 11 rebounds, 11 assists with 4 turnovers. Like, that's absurd.
Yeah. No, they absolutely rival any LeBron season, if that's the question, for sure. Either rival, if not, are better than.
Yeah. And I think he's pretty much a lock. You sent us we're putting a round table up on the site soon. And I know you kind of asked about who you thought was MVP. And I was looking at some of the advanced numbers for Jokic. Again, like, if you're an advanced stats person, I don't even think you can make a case for anyone else right now. But there've only been I think there's been 10 seasons in NBA history where one player has had their win shares per 48 above 0.3, and all but two of those seasons were MVP seasons. And the two that did not win it were before 1980, when the players voted for MVP. Mm. So there's never been a situation where a player has had this kind of like advanced numbers and has not been named MVP by the media. So I think it'd be unprecedented if he didn't win, honestly.
This is the first week of the season where I felt like it's a total lock, and he's been the leader for a long time. And he's had my vote basically for as long as, you know, Embiid and LeBron, like once they went down, it became pretty clear where this was headed. And a lot of it is attrition. I mean, if you look at the list of candidates, you know, the three at the top are Jokic, Embiid, Giannis, and then you have Curry, who's also at 20-1 with Giannis. And then everybody else below that has basically, you know, either been a little bit disappointing, like Doncic with the Mavs, or it's guys who have missed time. So, you know, I do feel like in some ways it's like Jokic is going to win it and people are already discrediting it. And it's like, well, he's only winning it because LeBron got hurt or because Embiid got hurt. I don't think that's fair at all. I think the numbers are going to hold up really well. Like, it doesn't feel like he's just backing his way into this MVP because nobody else is going to go grab it. Like, I think even if LeBron and Embiid had stayed healthy, I still think, based on the numbers, barring a crazy run from those guys, I think Jokic is the clear answer.
I think so, too. I mean, I was always someone who thought the LeBron argument, like, I thought those people were just, like, coping for not, like, I thought they were trying to save, you know, like, save their own asses about not voting for him however many years. Yeah. Like, I thought that was more about the voters themselves feeling guilty than LeBron actually earning an MVP. So I was always kind of like Jokic and Embiid. And, yeah, I mean, I think I'm still willing to go those two guys in that order. Yeah. And they're trying to discredit this MVP for Jokic is kind of ridiculous because this is one of the best individual seasons we've ever seen.
Like, the LeBron thing I would understand. Like, he probably deserved two or three more MVPs, but you can't just shoehorn him one when there's another deserving candidate. You know, like, in this situation, like, let's say LeBron had stayed healthy and Jokic was the one who missed 15 games. Maybe Jokic's numbers are still better, but LeBron has the games played argument. Like, okay, fine, give it to him. But, like, when there's a very clear MVP caliber candidate who would be right there in any other year, not just this year, that's where I kind of stop with the LeBron argument. Like, he's missed too much time, and even if he played it every game, it would still be Jokic.
Yeah, it's not like people are gonna, like, you know, look back in 50 years and be like, man, you know, like, is that, like, everyone knows that LeBron probably deserves more MVPs than he got. We all know that. That's part of like the collective NBA consciousness. That's not going to like go away in 50 years. And like people are not going to look back and be like, was LeBron that good though? He only won this many MVPs. He was only voted this many. Like it's okay that it didn't happen.
Yeah. I was thinking about that, and it's interesting that you compare Jokic with LeBron, you know, like has he ever had a statistical season this good? I think it was on the Russillo pod or on the Simmons pod. Bill Simmons said something I thought was super accurate. He's like, Damian Lillard can do everything Steph Curry can do, but he's just not Steph Curry. He's not as good as him. Like if you put out the blind resume and you look at the numbers, you're like, yeah, this guy, he basically does the same thing, but he doesn't. Like when you watch Steph, it's like, there's just another level. And I feel like that's kind of the thing with LeBron too, where like, none of his seasons are like that, you know, individually impressive unless you watch him actually play the games. You know, he's only led the league in scoring once. He only led the league in assists once, and that was last season. You know, those are the only two categories in which he's ever led the league on a per game basis. You know, he's never had 10 rebounds a game. He's only had last season over 10 assists per game. Like the counting stats aren't that crazy. You could find a lot of guys who've averaged 25, 5-5, you know, whatever it might be, but there's just something different about the way LeBron does it. And I don't think that takes away from him or takes away from anybody else, but I thought that comment by Simmons was like really, really accurate. And I think it just reminded me when you brought up the Jokic comment.
Yeah, I mean, I think to some extent.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
MVP is, can this player control the game on maybe on both ends of the court, but just in general, can they control the game and are they making their teammates better also?
Yeah.
And I think Jokic does that in a very similar way to LeBron. I think LeBron is better defensively, but just in terms of he can do it himself, he can completely turn a game around, he makes his teammates better. Like it, when you watch him, it feels in that way, it feels similar to watching LeBron. In no other way is it similar to watching LeBron James. But,
not at all. Yeah. So I want to talk about All-NBA. We haven't hit on this in a while, actually, and I think it's a great time to do it. As we're recording, we just found out now that Kawhi Leonard is going to be reevaluated in a week due to a sore foot that's been bothering him of late. He's already missed a few games. Now he's out at least, I think, 4 or 5 more games, just adding to a ridiculous list of injuries that virtually every major player in the league at some point has been affected. This is going to make all NBA just crazy this year. Honestly, I went through and kind of did, I wrote down all the true candidates at each position. I did kind of my mock first, second, third, even did a fourth team. And, you know, I think the names are going to make sense, but there's going to be a lot of like, oh, normally this guy would be on the first team, or normally this guy would be on the second team. And the one thing that does kind of standardize it is that so many guys have missed time, you know, where LeBron missing 17, 18, 20 games, whatever it ends up being, might not even really knock him down that far because Kawhi Leonard's already missed 15 games and he's going to miss 5 more. And, you know, Jason Tatum missed a bunch of time early in the year. Embiid missed a bunch of time. Harden's missed a ton of time. So, like, normally these injuries that would maybe just disqualify a guy or relegate him to the third team, so many other guys have been in the same situation that at the end of the day, it all kind of comes full circle. And, you know, before I started this exercise, I expected to have like just random dudes who would never make first team in contention for first team. And honestly, that really wasn't the case.
Yeah, all NBA is I mean, I think like the first two teams, I don't think are extremely difficult, but I think the third team is going to create some havoc. Like, I think third team forward is really difficult because you have to start evaluating, like, I mean, we'll get to it later. But
let's start at the top first.
Yeah.
So I wrote out my candidates for center, forward, and guard. Actually, I don't want to read through all of these. There's too many names. I'll start with my first team, and you can critique it from there. So as of right now, this is who I would have on first team All-NBA. At the two guard spots, Curry and Damian Lillard. The two forward spots, Giannis and LeBron. And the center spot, obviously, Jokic.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I think there is an argument to flip Lillard for Doncic and put Lillard on the second team as a guard. But I'm willing to hear either case. Like, I think right now I put Doncic there. I think, you know, he's putting up, I mean, they're putting up almost identical stats aside from rebounds. And I think, you know, Lillard throughout the year has had stretches where he's had like zero help, right? Like, that's the thing that stands about Lillard. It's like McCollum missed all that time. Nurkic was playing bad and then he missed time and now he's back and he's still playing bad. But like, there were a lot of stretches too where Doncic was out without Porzingis and their second best player was like Tim Hardaway Jr. So I think they both have cases from that standpoint.
Yeah, for sure. That was the toughest part. I really couldn't decide at all. I just went Lillard. I mean, I think that would be almost 50-50 right now. And Lillard, I think, is going to miss. He's missed at least two games already. He might miss another. If he misses three or four more, maybe that's enough to flip it towards Doncic. I initially had Kawhi as my other forward next to Giannis. But, you know, like I said, I think LeBron, assuming he comes back in 2 weeks or so, and Kawhi, you know, is now going to miss a week on top of the already substantial time that he's missed. So heading into Wednesday, he's already missed 13 games. And if he misses just 1 week, that would be four more. So that's 17 missed games for Kawhi. I mean, that total could easily run up close to 20. They have a few back-to-backs remaining. Probably doesn't play in every game the rest of the way. You know, maybe let's say maybe LeBron misses 22 or 23, Kawhi misses 19 or 20. I think LeBron probably wins out. And yet again, despite missing time, finds his way onto a first team All-NBA.
Yeah, I think that's right. Because if you want to look at anybody else who you would, I guess, consider for first team forward, it might be like Jimmy Butler. But he has missed, him and LeBron have played the exact amount of games, same amount of games right now. So their games play difference isn't going to be that much. And I think LeBron has probably the better resume there. So I'm good with him as first team forward.
Is there anyone else you'd consider at either guard or forward? I assume you're good with Jokic at center.
Yeah, I think Jokic has to be. I mean, for me, Jokic has to be first team center because he's MVP. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. I mean, I guess you have to think about Harden as first team, but other than that, no.
Yep, I vaguely kind of considered that early on, and then once today's news came out, I think that's probably enough to knock him out of first team contention. I had him on second team and I moved him to third. So my second team is Doncic or Lillard, whichever of those two you prefer. Doncic, Chris Paul, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid. I feel pretty good about that.
I do too. I had like nothing to add to that when I looked at it. I was like, no, this seems, other than like the Lillard Doncic thing, but
you're right again.
This seems like a very appropriate second team. I can't really argue with any of that.
Yeah, and this is where I really started to think that we'd have some carnage, you know, of like guys, you know, Harden missing too much time. I put him on third team. But then, you know, you're like Doncic and Chris Paul, that actually kind of makes a lot of sense on second team. Like, I'm kind of glad that I have an excuse to put Chris Paul on the second team because I think in terms of pure effectiveness, if they played the same number of games, it would obviously be Harden. I mean, Butler, it was such a weird start to the year for Miami and a weird start for him. He missed a bunch of time early on, got off to a really slow start. You know, we were wondering if Miami was even going to make the playoffs for a while, but he has been ridiculously good for the last like month and a half. And I mean, defensively, has just been a complete monster on that end of the court. He's missed the last two games, still battling an ankle injury. You know, we'll see if that causes him to miss any more time. But for now, I think he's pretty solidly on the second team. The thing is, like, if Kawhi ends up missing, you know, 2 or 3 weeks instead of 1 week, then we start to get into a little bit of a debate of maybe that other forward spot opening up.
Yeah, that would be tough if Kawhi misses more time, because then again, you start bleeding into like this next tier of forwards that I think is just kind of a mess.
Yes.
Between, I guess, let's just jump to third team and we can talk about those guys too.
Sure. So my third team, real quick, I have Harden. I have Russell Westbrook as the other guard. Sue me. I have Zion Williamson and Julius Randle as my forwards, and I have Rudy Gobert as my center.
I would love to have Russ on my third team if they were playing well, but they are not playing well enough for me to have him. I'm just out on that. Like he has to be on a winning team for me to like really. I just think there are other guys like you have to consider. I think Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker, and like you know they're not averaging the raw numbers that Westbrook is obviously, but there is a point where I think you have to consider the team record. And, you know, like if you put Devin Booker on that Washington team, would he also be averaging like, you know, 25 and like 8? Like team context matters to some extent. I understand why you have Russ on there because he's leading the league in assists.
Yes. He's at a career high 10.9 assists per game.
5 turnovers too. I think, but okay. So let's, I want to jump to forward because you have Zion and Julius Randle. And at first I was like, where's Jason Tatum? And then I kind of thought about, you know, like, is Tatum really having a better season than either of those guys? And then you have to, that sent me down a rabbit hole of, well, like, isn't Chris Middleton having just as good of a season as Jason Tatum? Which sent me down, and then, you know, like, it just keeps sending me down these rabbit holes where I'm like, but what about Jaylen Brown? His stats are pretty nice too. And LaVine's averaging almost 30 points a game.
Right. Well, so let me clarify and say that these are like my projections. These aren't who I would pick. This is who I think will make first, second, and third team. And I look back, Russ made it last year. He averaged like 27, 7, and 7 last season. He's at like 21, 11, and 11 this year. The efficiency's down for sure. The turnovers are up. The team is worse than the Rockets were last year. I get all that. But I think people like when somebody averages a triple-double, I think some people just look at the numbers and are like, this is crazy. I can't not vote for this guy. And so I Russ gets the legacy vote. I don't know. Guys who have made all NBA teams tend to make them more and more as long as they're still putting up numbers. Totally fine. I mean, if it were me, I think I would put Donovan Mitchell as the second guard. I think you have to reward the team success there. Basically the exact same case for Devin Booker. Although it felt like Booker just really wasn't all that good for the first month and a half. Whereas like Mitchell, it's just been a wire to wire, really nice season. But again, he's hurt now. He could miss multiple weeks. Maybe that ends up being the tiebreaker there. Zion, I included because people want to vote for Zion. People love Zion. The numbers have been really impressive. The efficiency has been great. You know, the passing's been a lot better. He started to do some things defensively over the last month or two. It just feels like there's a lot of positive momentum towards Zion. And I think there's kind of been like a lot of negative momentum towards like Brown and Tatum. I mean, Middleton didn't even make the All-Star game this year. I don't think people are now going to vote for him for all NBA after not voting him to the All-Star game. He didn't even make it as the replacement for the All-Star game. So, you know, those guys are all arguably more deserving than players like Westbrook and Zion. But I think if I'm trying to put myself in the headspace of an all-NBA voter, it feels like that's the direction that they would go. Could be completely wrong about this.
I mean, Zion's been ridiculous, man. Like, he's like 30 points a game on 60% shooting like almost every night at this point, and you know, like 4 or 5 assists. Like I know he has defensive deficiencies still and the Pelicans are like not a good team, but he's crazy, man. The jump that he made from the start of this season to now is crazy. Like the in-season improvement is ridiculous, but yeah, I mean, I understand wanting to vote him and Julius Randle third team. I just don't know. I mean, Tatum and Brown, part of the problem with them is the team has been disappointing, right?
Yeah.
They've been a little better. They're 31 and 27 now. They're not quite as bad as they were before. But to some extent, it almost feel weird having them both on third team. I don't know. This is we talked about like MVP pretty much being a lock. And rookie of the year could end up almost being a lock at this point. But I think this you know, I think third team All NBA is as much of a toss, is like a complete toss up still. I think the last, you know, the last stretch of the season here, the last month essentially, is going to really matter for this third team.
Why is the national media not talking about All NBA third team more?
That's a great question.
So where, what's your final answer? Where do you come in on Randall versus Tatum versus Middleton? And I think Paul George, we haven't even mentioned at all, who's quietly had a very good season. And, you know, just kind of feels like he's always in and out. And it feels like he's missed more time, I think, than he actually has. I love all those guys. I still think like Paul George is probably the best player of that group. I mean, Randall's argument is almost similar to Zion's, where it's like there's just been this upswell of positivity for him and the Knicks organization. And they have the same record as the Celtics. For the Celtics, it seems like a disappointing 31-27. For the Knicks, it's like a miracle 31-27. And I mean, the numbers are unassailable at this point. It's not like Tatum's numbers are better, but the team's been disappointing. It's like Randall's numbers are absolutely ridiculous at this point. And I know he's playing a ton of minutes and they're basically just funneling everything through him. But I mean, he is the sole reason that this team is four games over 500.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I think, you know, I think people might be, it's tough because on one hand, I think people might be more okay with not voting him third team because at this point, I'm pretty sure he's going to get most improved player. So I don't know if like people may just want to be like, well, Jason Tatum is still better than him, but, and they could just go Tatum. I mean, I think if you go Tatum, Paul George as your third team, that's not bad. I honestly don't know where I stand. I wish I could give you like a real answer. I think like the safe bet in terms of like, if you're a voter and you want to make sure your vote, like you want to be like 100% certain that your vote doesn't look ridiculous in hindsight, I think you just go Tatum, Paul George, and you just like wait for Zion and Randall to like prove it more. But yeah, I think that's where I stand.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I think that that's probably the safest way to avoid ridicule, especially if the Knicks get swept out of round one by like the Hawks or something. But this is why I put together a fourth team, which is Devin Booker, Kyrie Irving, Jason Tatum, Paul George, Nikola Vucevic.
So I think I'd have Adebayo over Vucevic. I think it was fine to have Vucevic over Adebayo in the All-Star game. But now that I'm like that I looked at Adebayo's stats compared to Vucevic's, I want to give the nod to Adebayo, man. Like, his defense is so much better than Vucevic. The scoring isn't as, you know, it's not like as diverse as Vucevic. You can score from like anywhere on the floor. And it's about, I think, five fewer points per game. But that feels kind of negligible when Adebayo is like, he's, I think, 5.5 assists a game. He can get the ball and like run up the court and like be a one-man fast break almost at this point. Mm-hmm. I'd be willing to vote him. And I actually think you could maybe have an argument for Adebayo over Gobert, but I think there's like a 0% chance that he gets in over Gobert.
Gobert would retire if that happened.
I think he would. I'm glad you included Kyrie because he is quietly having like a ridiculous season. And he was even before, like, he could have been an All-Star, but he's, you know, 27 points a game on 51% shooting. His turnovers are like down. Yeah, he's been awesome.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised with Kyrie if he were to sneak onto the third team. He's probably somebody we should have mentioned in that Russ discussion. Mitchell. I think Kyrie, Mitchell, Booker versus Westbrook is actually really, really close. And I would not fault you for voting for any of those guys. I mean, the thing with Kyrie is he stacked so many of his absences early on. You know, he missed like 8 games in a row in January. And since then, he hasn't missed more than 3 games in a row. Like, he's in the same boat as Paul George, where it feels like he's out of the lineup all the time. But it's just kind of like, oh, he'll play 6 games in a row, then he'll miss one, then he'll play 4, then he'll miss one. I mean, in terms of total games missed, I'm trying to see where he comes in. I mean, he's kind of right in that same zone as a lot of these guys who we've been talking about. You know, I would guess that he's played like 40 some games. He's played 41. Paul George has played 44. Brad Beal has played 48. Embiid's played 39. I mean, he's still played fewer games at Harden, which is kind of crazy. He's at 42. But I mean, Kyrie's played the same number of games for context as Jimmy Butler and LeBron James. So I think if we're comfortable putting those guys on first or second team, assuming Kyrie stays healthy, he's completely viable for second team. And I mean, the way he's played, you could consider him for, or I should say third team, the way he's played, you could consider him for second team, but I think to me, it's pretty hard to see him you know, beating out Luka Doncic and even Chris Paul, just because how good the Suns have been and the fact that he really hasn't missed any time.
Yeah, this Chris Paul leading the Suns is kind of like I think he's pretty much locked into that second or third team. And yeah, I mean, I think I would go Kyrie over Russ personally. But yeah, it's tough.
Who would have thought 2 years ago that Chris Paul, you know, the day he's traded to Oklahoma City, makes a third team All-NBA last year and then is probably on course to make a second team All-NBA, you know, 2 years removed from that trade as he's, you know, nearing age 36.
It's crazy, man. Like, I think, you know, there are guys who's, I mean, he is kind of the like antithesis of Russell Westbrook, right?
Yeah.
Kind of that's the irony of it, just from like a different styles of point guard. And his style is just so much more sustainable. So to some extent, like, we should have seen this coming, but to another extent, this is kind of unheard of. You know, he's just, again, he's 100% pure basketball IQ. He can control a game. He's always an extreme assist to turnover ratio guy. He can get to his spot. He gets to that elbow and just pulls up for like, it feels like he gets all of his 15 points from like that elbow jumper. But yeah, he's ridiculous, man. He's unbelievable.
To me, the craziest part is the way that he's making these All-NBA teams is by just outlasting everybody else. Like, he's making it because other guys are getting hurt. It's not like he's playing really well and then missing 20 games. He's just playing like steadily really good and not missing any time, which absolutely crazy considering how many games he missed from 2011 to 2018.
Yeah, I mean, he was someone who you couldn't draft in fantasy before like the third round because you just figured he was going to miss 10 to 20 games every year.
Yeah.
And like his last Clippers season, he was 61 games, and the two Houston seasons, he was 58 games both seasons. And now the irony is he's the healthy one, and he's getting the All-NBA votes.
He's not even being rested. That's the crazy part. He's missed one game this season. He missed one game on the second half of a back-to-back against the Cavaliers in February. He's played in every other back-to-back in a condensed season. Just preposterous.
I thought there was a chance I'd play him like 27 minutes a game, right? And he's not. He's 32 minutes a game. He's playing technically more minutes per game than he did last year. It's just, I don't know how he's doing it. He went vegan or something, right?
Is that the answer? Plant-based? Is that the same as vegan? I don't really know. He's playing more minutes than he did in 2016-17 in his final year with the Clippers. It's crazy.
It's really making sense.
Crazy. All right, let's end on this. What is your updated... If it needs an update, your updated finals pick? This will be, I guess, a little bit of a preview of the roundtable because this is another question in there.
I'm not letting the Harden news sway me, but it's interesting at least. I'm still sticking with what I've been sticking with the whole time, which is Nets Lakers, and Nets winning. I think in six is what I had picked. What are you doing?
I think that's about what I would have as well. I will say things are breaking pretty nicely for the Lakers, right? It's like, just as like Anthony Davis could come back as soon as Thursday. If he's not back Thursday, he's probably back this weekend at some point. LeBron's about 2 weeks away. Meanwhile, Donovan Mitchell is out indefinitely with a pretty bad looking ankle sprain. Damian Lillard is also battling a lower body injury. The Mavericks are losing games left and right. The Grizzlies, you know, just lost last night as well. You know, the Nets are going to go into the playoffs having played seven games together. You know, the Bucks can't figure things out. Like, for as bad as it looked for the Lakers when LeBron and Anthony Davis went down with fairly serious injuries, like all of a sudden, I mean, I think they're going to be kind of right back in the mix. And, you know, Jamal Murray going down, I think, is another huge one. Like even if LeBron only comes back with like five games left and maybe needs the first round of the playoffs to reacclimate himself, like, you know, the Jazz don't look as scary as they did a month ago. And the Nuggets without Murray are a hell of a lot of an easier opponent. I mean, Kawhi's hurt now. Like, all these kind of things that were working against the Lakers kind of seem to be turning the other way.
Yeah, I think they just kind of, like, I think these two teams just are inevitably kind of going to be the defaults the rest of the way. I'm not sure what anybody, like, I feel like we've seen what we've needed to see, right, from every team. Like, I don't know what's going to change my mind from here on out. There could be something, but it seems with the amount that players are being rested, guys are getting hurt. I just wish we could just like take 2 weeks off and then just start the playoffs.
That would actually be awesome. Now that you say that, that would be fantastic. how many teams in the West, and I know we said we would end on the title thing, but we'll actually end on this. Let's say Anthony Davis like tweaks his calf and has to miss a series. How many teams right now would the Lakers lose to with a fully healthy LeBron and the rest of the roster fully healthy, but no Davis?
I mean, I think there's a chance they could lose to any of the top four. Utah, Phoenix, Clippers, Denver. I do think there is a chance they could lose to Denver, even when they don't have Jamal Murray. And I think that might be where I stop it. Like, I wish I had more faith in the Trailblazers, but they just keep, like, letting me down. Yeah.
And I almost feel, I mean, Denver is kind of the one that I was wondering about. Like, I think Utah and Phoenix at full strength, you know, they're probably a little too much. Although, I mean, if you're getting peak LeBron, and we've seen him, you know, be able to hang in with teams that are a hell of a lot better than those two. So I certainly wouldn't write off the Lakers. The Clippers with a healthy PG and Kawhi, that'd be really tough with no Davis. But I mean, if you look at the Lakers versus the Nuggets, the Lakers are the better team on paper when everybody's healthy. You remove their second best player and you remove the Nuggets second best player. Like, to me, I think I would still pick the Lakers, as good as Jokic has been. You know, I almost feel like Murray is like more important to Denver's playoff ceiling than Davis is to the Lakers.
He might be. That's tough.
Need Davis to win the title. Do you need Davis to get to the West Finals? That I'm not sure.
I don't know, man. There were a lot of points in the playoffs last year where he looked like he was better than Giannis. And I think that can't be. I don't think that can be like understated.
Yeah.
Even though he was having like a bad year this year. Some of that could have just been like fatigue and stuff like that. But I wish there was like a universe where we could see that series play out, you know, LeBron versus Jokic with like the bad supporting casts and just see what they were able to do. But, you know, that's something I actually like. I want Anthony Davis to be healthy. Yeah.
Well, me too. I mean, we'll get to see the Jokic side of that. Maybe there's a pretty good chance that those teams maybe end up matching up. But all right, man. We'll end on that. This All-NBA stuff is going to be fun. I'm very much looking forward to how this turns out over the next few weeks. And the injury news just keeps coming. It's absolutely insane how many stars have missed weeks or 2 weeks at a time.